Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. I'm Jamie here with John. What's happening?
Dude, I'm so glad to be here.
I bet you are.
I am. Guys, we have so much awesome stuff to get to before we even get to our case today, which is going to be a really good one. I'll let Jamie take the lead on that.
Yeah, I'm really excited about today's case, about John McAfee. You may know him from such things as pop-ups on your computer telling you that you need more security help. There's a lot of that going on. Also want to give a big thank you before John gets to his breaking news, if you will. Give a thank you to a couple five-star reviews that have come in over on Apple Podcasts. This first one comes to us from Sweden, from JLKCE. That is not Jason Kelsey. That is somebody else from Sweden. Says, love it. Been listening to you guys for years and thought it was about time I left a review. Great podcasts, lovely hosts, much love from Sweden. Thank you so much for the Swedish love.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, very kind of you to do so. This comes from RayRay45. I love listening to John and Jamie. Respectfully done cases every time with the right amount of banter. Definitely a podcast worthy of five stars. Keep up the good work, guys. And the title of Ray Ray's was Two Good Guys.
Oh, well, you might need to get to know us a little better.
Well, I don't know. If I was going to seek a compliment, I think just being a good guy is up there with what I'd want people to say. So thank you so much, Ray Ray. You're Thanks, the only Ray Ray I know.
I know a Ray, but not a Ray Ray.
It's a double Ray.
Guys, we have some breaking news from True Crime Cast. We are going to start a new show called Paradigm, and we have already recorded all of season one, and it is going to release really soon. Do we have a date yet?
October 23rd, we are going to drop the entire season, and it is more of a long-form investigative podcast where so this is one case per episode.
Yep, so we're going to have at least 8 episodes that is focused entirely on the Lily Lid murders that took place in East Tennessee in the late 90s. And we are going to look at it from every angle that you can imagine. And I'm really excited about it. We've done a ton of work. Jamie especially has worked his tail off on this one. And I'm excited for you all to hear it. We want to go ahead and play a little teaser to get you kind of in the right mind frame for what the show is going to be about.
Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is a pretty drive. You ever been up this way before?
Yeah, this will take you from Knoxville to Johnson City.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, I guess, but that's a road you've traveled quite a bit.
Yep.
I think this is the rest stop, so Payne Hollow has got to be close.
Yep, we're going to turn off right here.
While they were at a rest area on Interstate 81, a group of teenagers carjacked the family.
We believe, and I still believe, that it was satanic.
That's when they were carjacked and driven to Baileyton, where they were shot and left in a ditch.
A clarification made by the Supreme Court opens the possibility now of parole for 2 of the 6 people convicted in the Lily Lynn murders.
It could have been anywhere. It just happened to be here.
Every good story has 3 sides.
The prosecution, the defense, and the truth.
My name is Jamie Boggs.
And I'm John Bailey. And as a Tennessee native, I want to know what really went down in the place where I grew up. This is Paradigm. We are really excited for you all to be able to download those and listen to them. And please let us know what you think about them when you do. But for our Patreon members, we have released 2 interviews in their entirety that we used or took from when we were making these episodes. So those are only going to be available to Patreon members, and they are available for your download there now.
Yeah, and we're going to put all the regular episodes up. We don't have a date for that yet. It will be released to the public on October 23rd, but we will get it to our Patreon folks before then, just as another token of thanks for the support.
So if you have not joined Patreon and you want early access and ad-free access to those new episodes of the show called Paradigm, go sign up for Patreon today. Go to patreon.com and just search for True Crime Cast. Will pop up. It's as little as $3 a month, and you're going to get access to all that.
All right. That's more housekeeping than we normally like to do, and we've got a fantastic case today.
We are going to be talking about John David McAfee. So, Jamie, why don't you get the ball rolling on this one?
Yeah, John McAfee was born on a U.S. Army base in England on September 18th of 1945. His dad, Don McAfee, was American, and his mother, Joan, was British. Don grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, so he took his family to nearby Salem, Virginia, to raise his kids, and that's where John was brought up. John had always said he felt as much British as he did American. I've been fortunate enough, John, to know a lot of second-generation Americans, and they really tend to, depending on where they're from, cling closely to their heritage, and in some ways I'm kind of jealous of that because I don't have that to tie myself to. According to BBC, Don was an abusive alcoholic, and John spent a lot of his childhood in fear of abuse from his father. When John was 15, his father, Don, committed suicide by shooting himself. There's a documentary about John McAfee, and it's called Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee. It's alleged that John may have shot his father and staged the scene to look like a suicide.
In 1967, John went to Roanoke College in Virginia, where he got his bachelor's degree in math. In the first year there, John started drinking pretty heavily, and that's pretty common for college students, but I think John took it a bit extreme. Then he went on to work towards a doctorate at Northeast Louisiana State College, where he was also a professor. While there, he met an 18-year-old student and started in a sexual affair with her. The two were eventually married, but the affair led to John's expulsion. From 1968 to 1987, John worked for various tech companies, including NASA, General Electric, and Xerox. Those are some pretty big companies, Jamie.
Big brand names.
He also spent a lot of his time getting into hard drugs. He told Wired magazine that he would often go into work while tripping on LSD. But in 1983, he was working at a company called Amex and realized his daily routine was snorting coke at his desk and drinking from a bottle of scotch. He always felt alone and scared, and he was also divorced by then, and he decided to go to Alcoholics Anonymous.
In 1987 is when John created McAfee Associates to sell software that he called Virus Scan. It was the very first antivirus software on the market, and it was one of the first software products to be distributed widely via the internet.
I remember in the early 90s, my grandparents were the only folks I knew that had computers until the late 90s, and I remember every year going to buy their newest copy of this Virus Scan. And I do remember when it was able to be downloaded directly from the internet and not having the CD-ROM disc.
Yeah, which was a big deal because, I mean, it's easy to lose that CD. People would try to share it. And to be honest with you, John, I really enjoyed getting around that to show you a little bit of I don't know, some of the misfortune of my youth. I didn't hack people maliciously, but I dabbled in it just messing with people. And this stopped me on a lot of computers.
Well, that's good. It worked. I remember when the download was available, my grandfather would not do it. He only trusted the CD-ROM.
I get that. No, I totally get that. You need that hard copy. You know, it's legit. The internet can put out whatever. And at first, John really wasn't looking to make money off this. He was trying to raise awareness for the need to be protected from computer viruses. But this awareness campaign actually scared people into wanting to protect their new computers because computers back then, I mean, they're expensive now. I think they're probably more accessible now than they were when we were kids. It was much more expensive. Laptops were kind of unheard of. Most people had desktop computers, so you had the tower and the monitor, and everything was kind of separate. But this really did scare people. And there are times, honestly, when I'll get a pop-up about a virus, and I don't know, I feel that old panic from back in the 90s. By the year 1990, his product took off and he was making $5 million a year, which if you translate that to today, it's about $11 million a year off of this software that he didn't intend to make money off of. I wish I could accidentally make $11 million a year off of a hobby.
Yeah, I'm not making $11 million a year. In 1993, John stepped down as CEO, but stayed with the company as chief technical officer. But by 1994, he was not involved with the operations of McAfee Associates at all. After various owners, Intel acquired McAfee in August of 2010, but by 2014, they tried to rebrand McAfee as Intel Security. John's response was, "I'm now everlastingly grateful to Intel for freeing me from this terrible association with the worst software on the planet." Little unhinged there, huh?
It brought him millions of dollars a year. It created global awareness of viruses.
Most importantly, it made him millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, I mean, some bad products can make people a lot of money, but this did what it said it was going to do, right? Was it just not, like, why did he feel like it was so bad that he wanted his name off of it? It's just fascinating to me.
The business soon demerged from Intel and went back to the McAfee name. But John told the BBC that he never used McAfee products.
It's not a very high endorsement there, John. About John.
Right.
A lot of Johns. In August of 2009, the New York Times reported that because of the 2008 financial crisis, John's personal fortune had dwindled from $100 million to $4 million. I realize that $4 million is a lot of money, but if you lose 96% of your wealth, that's a really big deal. He had reportedly invested in and built many mansions in the United States that went unsold during this big recession. But his trouble started when he fled to live in Belize in 2008. While he was there, he started a company called Coramex that grew plants for possible medicinal purposes. It wasn't long before his lead microbiologist quit on him, and that company quickly went under. In April of 2012, the Belize government had suspicions that John was actually running a meth lab instead of trying to create medicinal products. The Gang Suppression Unit of the Belize Police Force raided the Coramex research facility in trying to find a meth plant, essentially, like from Breaking Bad. When they arrived, the 67-year-old John was reportedly in bed with a 16-year-old girl. The GSU, again, Gang Suppression Unit, confiscated John's passport and licensed weapons, shot his dog, and arrested John on charges of unlicensed drug manufacturing and unlicensed weapon possession. Those charges would eventually be dropped and John was released, but obviously this puts a big hamper on any future plans you have. John claimed that the whole raid happened just because the government was corrupt and wanted to take him down and take away from his wealth. He said it was because 2 weeks prior to this event, they had tried to get him to make a $2 million political donation. When he refused to, shortly after was when this raid happened. So hard to believe that was a coincidence.
This wild story doesn't end there, especially what happened in Belize. So while he was there, he had a neighbor, and it was another American by the name of George Fall. In November of 2012, George filed a complaint against John, accusing him of failing to contain his 8 to 12 vicious dogs. So instead of going over and talking to your neighbor about the need for you to have these dogs on a leash or to better keep them on your property, he did what most people do and filed a complaint.
Yeah.
So the dogs were allegedly attacking residents and tourists. So if this is true, it's not good. But the complaint also said that John had security guards and they would walk around the compound at night with guns out, and that they were always having people come and go, like a lot of traffic from John's property. So after this complaint was filed, two of John's dogs ended up dying because they were fed poison. They were poisoned by tortillas.
What a way to go.
So the next day, after these dogs died from poisoning, George Fall was found dead by a gunshot wound to the head. Does that sound familiar?
That is suspiciously similar to the way that John's father died. So, of course, since this complaint had been filed by George, that makes John suspect number one. And when we get back from the break, we'll talk about this investigation into John's possible role in George's death.
We've only communicated via text.
Don't tell him it's a wrong number. Have some fun with it. Play along.
You don't know who you have really been messing with.
Why would you have a duffel bag full of cash?
You're not so big and bad when you're not behind your phone.
Next time you may not make it out alive.
You don't work here.
Stop, Nick.
Freeze. Drop the bag and get on the ground.
One thing at a time. First, the cash.
You know you're not the only option I have, right?
You're behind this whole thing, aren't you?
No, this wasn't supposed to happen.
It's over for you.
No, 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 no.
Why is this happening?
From the makers of True Crime Cast, find the fictional mystery Left Undead wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
After George Fall had been killed, John knew that he was going to be suspect number one. He was so afraid that police were going to think that he had something to do with this that he buried himself in sand for several hours with a cardboard box over him, thinking that nobody would find him that way. We've gone from John saying some ridiculous things and having some suspicious behavior to what seems like a potential break with reality here.
Yeah, this guy seems completely unhinged at this point.
Local authorities did look for John as a person of interest because why wouldn't they? So John went on the run with his new girlfriend, who was 20 years old, Samantha Venegas. Again, John's 67 at the time. And along on this journey went some reporters from Vice. The group fled to Guatemala as John continued to claim that he would be silenced by the Belize government if he was put in jail and that this crime would be pinned on him. In Guatemala, John continued to conduct interviews, claiming that he had been mistreated and framed for murder. But when Vice posted a photo of John that still had the geolocation tracking information attached to the photo, Guatemalan authorities found John and arrested him for entering their country illegally. At this time, he was taken to a detention center to await being deported.
While he was waiting to be deported, he actually claimed that he had a heart attack, two minor heart attacks, in fact, and that required him to be hospitalized. Now, he did this, like we all knew, to buy time for his attorney to file a series of appeals to prevent him from being deported. But instead, on December 12, 2012, he was released and deported back to the United States.
I think his big fear and the reason for faking the heart attacks is he didn't want to go back to Belize. So I think going back to the U.S. is probably best case scenario for John at this time.
So the night that John arrived back in Miami, he solicited a sex worker named Janice Dyson. She was 30 years younger than him. Jamie, I've never had a heart attack, but I know that if you do seriously have heart issues, this kind of night, probably not a wise idea.
Might want to take it easy for a while, John.
Clear that by your doctor. They started an actual relationship and got married in 2013. Janice went as far to claim that John saved her from human trafficking.
And we do know that that is a big issue in the sex work industry, and especially there, kind of on the border down in Miami. Back in the United States, John continued to make headlines himself. In 2015, John announced that he was going to be running for president as the candidate in the newly formed Cyber Party. Did you know that in our political system, we have a cyber party?
I honestly did not know that. I knew we had, of course, Democrat, Republican, Independent, but I didn't know we had a cyber party.
I know there's the Green Party. I know there are a lot of different parties, but a cyber party sounds like you hanging out with your friends and having drinks in a chat room.
I just want to go to like a slumber party and sleep for a long time.
Later in 2015, he switched to the Libertarian Party. He consistently polled alongside the party's other candidates, Gary Johnson and Austin Peterson. So he was actually keeping pace with them, and they participated in the very first nationally televised Libertarian Party presidential debate. He came in second in the primaries. He beat out Austin Peterson and narrowly lost to Gary Johnson. In 2018, John announced that he would again run for president in 2020 with the Libertarian Party. He mostly campaigned for wider use of cryptocurrency, which isn't as valuable as it was a few years ago. And in 2019, he tweeted that he would continue his campaign in exile. This announcement followed reports that John, his wife, and four members of his campaign team were indicted for tax-related felonies in the United States. John claimed his team was in international waters and had previously tweeted he was going to Venezuela. John joined the ticket as a vice presidential candidate for Adam Kokesh while still running on his own presidential campaign. I didn't realize you could do both, but you know what you can do? You can lose both, is what John McAfee did.
During his run for president, John said a number of noteworthy things. The first one, December of 2018, he tweeted that he had 47 genetically born children. So 47 kids is what he's claiming to have.
And I don't want to make light of any of this. It's a lot of tragedy. A lot of people are hurt. But those are some sperm donor numbers right there. That's not procreation numbers unless you're Nick Cannon.
Well, or John McAfee. His wife Janice described him in a Father's Day message as, quote, father of many, loved by few, end quote. More importantly, though, in 2019, John said that he had not paid income taxes in the United States for 8 years because he believed that taxes were illegal. I feel like if I don't pay taxes for a couple of years, I go to big boy jail.
Yeah, they're not going to let you off the hook for that. And I mean, same for me. We don't make as much money as John McAfee had, so it seems like the government would miss his taxes more than ours.
Another string of tweets that are important to the John McAfee case started in 2017. In July of 2017, that's when John predicted on Twitter that the price of Bitcoin would jump to $500,000 within 3 years, claiming that if he was wrong, he would eat his own genitalia on national television. I mean, this guy's officially lost it.
Yeah, I mean, both of those statements separately are crazy, let alone tying them together.
2 years later, in July of 2019, he would go on to say that the price of Bitcoin in his prediction would be $1 million by the end of 2020. In January 2020, he tweeted that his prior predictions were all just like fake news, basically to get new users to onboard. And Bitcoin had limited potential because it is ancient technology.
What a series of quotes. In July of 2019, after he and his staff went on the run in what he called international waters, John and his entourage were arrested on his yacht while they were docked in the Dominican Republic. They were taken in on suspicions that they were carrying high-caliber weapons and ammunition. Their weapons would be seized, and the group was held over for 4 days before finally being released.
But just 1 year later, in October of 2020, John was arrested at the Barcelona airport on his way to Istanbul with a British passport. The arrest was made at the request of the U.S. Department of Justice. They were charging him with tax evasion, and when he was arrested, his case was unsealed. John had allegedly earned millions of dollars from 2014 to 2018 and didn't file any income tax returns. Now, the day after his arrest, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, filed a complaint alleging John that he promoted certain initial coin offerings. in a fraudulent scheme. John would present himself as an impartial investor when he promoted the ICO, but he was getting paid $23 million in digital assets in return. While in Spain, John claimed he would face political persecution in the U.S. On June 23rd, 2021, a Spanish court ruled his extradition would go forward.
Just a few hours after this ruling, John McAfee was found dead in his prison cell. Spanish authorities claim that everything indicates that John killed himself by hanging. An official autopsy affirmed that declaration that he had committed suicide by hanging himself. But not everybody believes that. One major reason is that in 2019, John tweeted, "If I suicide myself, I didn't. I was whacked." There were several times that John said if he were ever found dead by hanging, it would mean he was murdered. John's widow Janice also didn't believe that John was suicidal and called for a thorough investigation. John, I'm talking to you, John, now. In a lot of cases, we see when people do die in this way, there's going to be a conspiracy that maybe they didn't do it themselves, that somebody was trying to shut them up. And I've seen a lot of people on television, people on in court proceedings say, "I am not suicidal. If this happens, it wasn't me," just to try to get out in front of it. But I've also learned that John doesn't say a lot of true things. So it's really tough to tell what really happened here.
Yeah, it's really hard to take his word on anything. So I'm not taking it on this one either. John's adventures were documented in Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee, and that is on Netflix. In that documentary, John's ex-girlfriend, Samantha Hiera, claims that John faked his own death and is currently living in Texas. In that documentary, she looks straight at the camera and says, "I got a call from Texas. It's me, John. I paid off people to pretend that I am dead, but I am not dead. There are only three persons in this world that know that I am still alive, and then asked me to run away with him." That's what she says in this documentary, and honestly, can't say that I'm surprised if it's true.
Well, it very well could be true, but this could also be verifiable in some ways, or at least to show that she got a phone call from Texas or a phone call. I realize he could use VPNs and that kind of thing now, but I don't know. You could check out her story a little bit at least.
Another crazy part of this story is John's ghostwriter, Alex Cody Foster, said in an interview that he received a notification on the Telegram app a month after John's death. The notification said John's phone number had joined the app. So he went on to say, and quote, "I was like, what in the world? This is so weird. So I texted the number and I was like, hey, you're using a dead man's phone? Who are you?" They read the message and didn't respond. Soon after that, that number just got wiped. So I thought a number of things could have happened, like someone has John's phone, Janice has John's phone, or maybe John has John's phone. I don't think I'll ever really know, end quote.
If you ask Janice, she does not think that her husband's still alive, but she does want to know more about the circumstances surrounding his death because she is adamant he did not kill himself. She continues to fight for the Spanish government to release his remains so that they can conduct an independent autopsy to try and judge if maybe this wasn't suicide after all. And from what we can tell, his body is still being held in Spain. That's where he allegedly died. So if he is dead, his body's still overseas.
So let's go back to this George Fall murder case. Again, this is the guy who filed a complaint on John saying that he didn't contain his dogs. And there had never been any charges filed. No one has ever been held accountable for George's murder. George's family brought a wrongful death suit to John in Florida, and John lost that case. And George's family was awarded by the courts, well, John was supposed to pay $25 million, but John never paid any of that money. So he was never charged or convicted, but he did lose that wrongful death suit. So there's at least some evidence somewhere that John was responsible in some way?
Yeah, the burden of proof in civil cases is the preponderance of evidence, which is basically more likely than not, whereas in a criminal case, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's easier to get somebody to get a beneficial verdict in a civil case. But at the same time, you're right. That means there was at least some evidence suggesting that John had something to do with this. And I'll also say that very few civil cases when money is awarded, I would love to see the percentage where the full amount is actually paid, because you're allowed to make payments. And I doubt anybody hardly ever gets to that full amount if they pay anything at all.
Yeah. Guys, that's going to do it for John McAfee. And I'll be honest, Jamie, I didn't know all this before I started researching the case. So were you surprised by all this, or did you know all this about
John? So I knew he created the software, and I knew that he was kind of a wild character that said some wild stuff. I didn't know everything that he was involved with. I didn't know he had trashed his own company, that he had been accused of murder. And honestly, I thought he was still alive before we started looking into this, and I may or may not be wrong. So he's not necessarily Jimmy Hoffa, but I think figuring out what happened to John McAfee may be one of those mysteries that we continue to follow for years.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that if I knew this guy in real life, I wouldn't trust him. Fair assessment?
Absolutely.
But yet we trust his company to our most precious secrets of identity every single day. Who's to say that John wasn't making secrets of millions of dollars by selling our stuff to people who shouldn't have them?
I don't know. Maybe he's doing the Superman 3 office space scheme where he's just taking like a tenth of a penny every time we make a payment on our computer. I don't know.
But it is interesting that somebody that I would not trust at all, I've actually trusted a lot.
Yeah.
And like that I let him protect my private data.
Yeah. Yeah. He is head of computer security for most of the world and is one of the least trustworthy people that I've seen in the business world and in the public spotlight.
And he may or may not be dead. Yeah. I mean, do you feel like he's dead? I mean, do you think there is a chance that he faked his own death?
I definitely think there's a chance. I think he's probably dead, but I think there's a chance that he did fake it. Now, I also think that he likes attention and he likes controversy. So he
wouldn't be able to stay out of the spotlight?
If he is dead, then he'll stay dead. If not, I think we'll see him again.
I think that's true. And I think I agree with you.
Yeah, so if that happens, you'll hear about it right here first on True Crime Cast or over on our TikTok page. I found that the easiest way to get out updates. Our following is growing exponentially over there. There are a couple of videos that continue to get hundreds of comments a day. And we're trying to keep up with that and use that as our breaking news or our ongoing updates that we don't get to do in the show every day. So follow us on TikTok at True Crime Cast. We're also on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at that handle.
Don't forget about our new show coming out called Paradigm. We will post on social media when that channel is up so that you can like and subscribe that channel too. And you'll never miss an episode.
So if our fictional podcast Left Undead was not your thing, Paradigm will be. It is true crime presented in a different form, but still with our take and our taste in it.
I feel like it's probably the best thing we've ever done. I'm not going to lie.
I feel really good about it. We put a lot of focus and a lot of time behind it, talked to a lot of people, and I'm really excited for people to hear it and to get some feedback.
Again, if you want to get early ad-free episodes from Paradigm, you can join Patreon. And as we speak, as you're hearing this, there are two interviews that are only going to be played in their entirety exclusively on Patreon. So go check that out as well.
We appreciate you guys. We'll be back with an episode of True Crime to go on Friday.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.